Bethel and Ai, and that's going to be one of the places where Abraham is going to pitch his tents and where part of our story is going to start at. The area just south of the Dead Sea, next to Zoar, that's going to be the area of Sodom and Gomorrah, roughly. Depending on which map you look at, sometimes they've got Sodom and Gomorrah split up a little bit more. Sometimes they define it as a simple area like this, south of the Dead Sea. The big thing that I'm hoping to show y'all with this simple map is the scale of things. Roughly the length of the Dead Sea is 40 miles, so we're not talking about a huge expanse of land. In addition to that, we're from Ai, where that's located, Bethel, they're able to look down and see the whole valley through there. So again, the scale of things, even though I can't quite depict it in this, we're not talking about big distance. Roughly from here to New Braunfels is all the distance we're talking about. Now, we are going to be talking about Abraham today, and next 2 weeks, Pastor's going to be actually doing the character study of Abraham. But because of the fact that Lot and Abram's life are so intertwined, it's difficult to try and tell the story of Lot without including Abram. And so we have several verses to go through here, and I'll just read this and bear with me as we go through it. Terah lived 70 years and became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Now these are the records of the generations of Terah. Terah became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran became the father of Lot. Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his birth in Ur of the Chaldees. Abram and Nahor took wives for themselves. The name of Abram's wife was Sarah, or Sari, and the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Ishkar. Sari was barren. She had no children. Terah took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sari his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went out together from the Ur of Chaldees in order to enter the land of Canaan. And they went as far as Haran and settled there. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. So the first question just simply is, what was Lot's relation to Terah? Who was he? Well, Terah was a grandfather, so Lot was a grandson. And Lot's relation to Abram? Uncle Abraham, or Uncle Abram, that's right. Simple questions, just to keep us going on this. In Genesis 12, we're going to read, so Abraham went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Now Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran, and Abram took Sarai's wife and Lot his nephew and all their possessions which they had accumulated and the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. Thus they came to the land of Canaan. Abram passed through the land as far as the site of Shechem to the oak of Moreh. Now the Canaanite was then in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said to your descendants, I will give this land. So he built an altar there to the Lord who appeared to him. Now, how old is Abram when he leaves Haran? 75, that's right. And now, what does Abram do at the oak of Moreh? He builds an altar. The reason I'm asking those simple questions is I want to get this idea that Lot is on this journey with him. And so he's being exposed to these things that Abram's doing. Remember, his dad's dead, his grandpa's dead, so Abram is going to be like this father figure in this man's life. I don't know the exact age difference between the two of them. The Bible doesn't tell us that. But I can tell you that Lot is influenced by the lifestyle of Abram. Now, Genesis 12 is going to talk to us about Abram going to Egypt. Yes, ma'am. He built an altar to worship the Lord. But in Genesis 12, we're going to hear the story of Abram in Egypt, and Pastor will talk to us next week about that. But the gist of it is that they go to Egypt. Remember, Abram says, this is my sister, not my wife. They basically get evicted from Egypt, and so that's, in a nutshell, what happens in chapter 12. And Lot's still with them, so it's going to tell us, going into 13. So Abram went up from Egypt to the Negev, he and his wife, and all belonged to him, and Lot with him. Now Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver, and in gold. He went on his journeys from the Negev as far as Bethel to the place where his tent had been at the beginning between Bethel and Ai, to the place of the altar which he had made there formerly, and there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now Lot went with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents. The land could not sustain them while dwelling together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to remain together. And there strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. Now the Canaanite and the Perizzite were dwelling in the land. So Abram said to Lot, "Please let there be no strife between you and me, nor between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brothers. Is not the whole land before you? Please separate from me. If to go to the left, then I go to the right, or if to the right, then I go to the left." Lot lifted up his eyes and saw the valley of the Jordan that was well watered everywhere. That was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go to Zoar. So Lot chose for himself all the valley of the Jordan, and Lot journeyed eastward. Thus they separated from each other. Abram settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled in the cities of the valley, and moved his tents as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked exceedingly, and sinners against the Lord. Now, just question, from where did Abram and Lot depart? Egypt, right? That's where it's going to start. And who were involved in the arguments? Herdsmen. So this wasn't between Lot and Abram, but it was a herdsman. And the other thing, too, is it wasn't like two type A personalities duking it out. This was a legitimate argument or problem that they were having, that the land just couldn't sustain things. And then what did Lot choose for himself? The valley. And what was that little word before the valley of the Jordan? All. He chose it all. Now remember, too, that Lot's the younger, and he was given the privilege of making this decision. The Bible doesn't indicate that he hesitated on making this decision. It wasn't like he said, "No, Abram, let's talk about this. Let's find out what's best for you and best for me, and we'll come to some amicable agreement on where I should go." He said, "No, I want the good stuff." That's the way he was. He didn't show any deference to Abraham, and he chose all the valley. And the Bible also indicates from that last verse we read that Sodom was already known for being a wicked and ungodly place. So the idea here is Lot knew what he was moving into. It wasn't like he moved there and suddenly the neighborhood went south on him. He knew what he was getting into. Let's be done. In Genesis 13, we'll read, "The Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, 'Now lift up your eyes and look from the place where you are northward and southward and eastward and westward, for all the land which you see, I will give it to you and to your descendants forever. I will make your descendants as the dust of the earth, so that if anyone can number the dust of the earth, then your descendants can also be numbered. Arise, walk about the land through its length and breadth, and for I will give it to you.' Then Abram moved his tent and came and dwelt by the oaks of Mamre, which are in Hebron, and there he built an altar to the Lord." Now in Genesis 14, we're going to read about this war that goes on. And it came about in the days of, please bear with me as I go through these names, "And it came about in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of Goim, that they made war with Bera, king of Sodom, and with Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Adamah, and Shemember, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, that is Zoar. All these came as allies to the valley of Sidon, that is the Salt Sea. 12 years they had served Chedorlaomer, but the 13th year they rebelled, and in the 14th year, Chedorlaomer and the kings that were with him came and defeated the Rephaim in Ashtoreth Karnanim, excuse me, and the Zuzum in Ham, and Emmon in Sheveth. I wish the pastor was in here for pronounce that one. And the Horites in their Mount Seir as far as Elpaphram, which is by the wilderness. So we see a battle and a victory. Then they turned back and came to Emmethbat, that is Kadesh, and they conquered all the country of the Amalekites and also the Amorites who live in Hazor Tamar, and the king of Sodom and the king of Gomorrah and the king of Admah and the king of Zeboim and the king of Bela, that is Zoar, came out, and they arrayed for battle against them in the valley of Siddim, against Chelomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of Goim, and Amraphel, king of Shinar, and Arioch, king of Elisar, four kings against five. Now the valley of Siddim was full of tar pits, and the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah fled, and they fell into them. For those who survived fled to the hill country. Then they took all the goods of Sodom and Gomorrah, and all their food and supply, and departed. They also took Lot, Abram's nephew, and his possessions, and departed, for he was living in Sodom. Then a fugitive came, before I go too far, that little last part, he was living in Sodom. Remember when Lot left and they departed and split ways, Lot had been living in tents, and he moved his tents to the area of Sodom. Now he was living in Sodom. So you can see kind of a progression in Lot's life now. Living on the outskirts of a wicked city, now he's living in the wicked city itself. Genesis 14, we read, then a fugitive came and told Abram, the nephew. Now he was living by the oaks of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol, and the brother of Aner. These were allies with Abram. When Abram heard that his relative had been taken captive, he led out his trained men, born in his house, 318, and went in pursuit as far as Dan. He divided his forces against them by night. He and his servants defeated them and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus. He brought back all the goods and also brought back his relative Lot with his possessions and the women and the people. Then after his return from the defeat of Chelomer and the kings who were with him, the king of Sodom went out to meet him in the valley of Sheveh, that is the king's valley. And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. Now he was the priest of God Most High. He blessed him and said, blessed be Abram, God of Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hands. He gave him a tenth of all. The king of Sodom said to Abram, give the people to me and take the goods for yourself. Abram said to the king of Sodom, I have sworn to the God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, that I will not take a thread or a sandal thong or anything that is yours, for fear that you would say, I have made Abram rich. I will take nothing except what the young men have eaten and the share of the men who have went with me, Aner, Eshcol, and Mamre. Let them take their share. Now that's the end of chapter 14. And now we're going to see Abram's promised a son and descendants in chapter 15, okay? And again, I'm just trying to draw a timeline for you of what's been going on here. In chapter 16, we'll read about Sarai and Hagar. And y'all know that Hagar is the handmaiden of Sarai. And she says, I can't have a child. I want you to have a child by Abram for me. And so Ishmael is born. And so my first question was, how old is Abram when Ishmael is born? Do y'all have an idea on that one, Mafian? From pull back the Wayback Machine. 86. Yes, that is a correct answer from the back row. He is 86. In Genesis 17, we're going to read about the circumcision of Abraham and also of Ishmael. Sarah gets a new name. And y'all know roughly the time frame we're talking now, how old Abraham is when this is done and how old Ishmael is. How old is a bar mitzvah for a Jewish boy? Y'all remember that one? Pardon? 13. So Ishmael is 13, which would make Abram, if he was 86, plus 13 is? 99. He is 99 at the time. So that's what's going on here. Now, what time do we start our whole journey with this? Back in Genesis 12, Abram was how old? 75, right? Now he's 99. So roughly 24, 25 years has been going on in this relationship between Abram and Lot. And Lot's seen a lot of things through Abram's life and been a part of it and been privileged to be part of it. And then chapter 18 happens. The Lord appears to Abram, which was a great thing. He's told he's going to have a son with Sarah. We know Isaac's going to be around the corner. But he's also let in a little secret. Oh, by the way, we're going to be destroying Sodom and Gomorrah. One of the verses to focus on with that is this idea expressed in Genesis 18:20. And the Lord said, "The outcry of Sodom and Gomorrah is indeed great, and their sin is exceedingly grave." Now, it's talking about this outcry. Can y'all think in some previous chapters in Genesis where there was an outcry or a crying out of something that went wrong, something that shouldn't have happened? Cain and Abel, and what happened? Yeah, the idea of this outcry that's expressed in Sodom, and also the cry that's expressed by the blood of Abel being spilt on the ground, his death, in other words, is the idea of a social injustice or vengeance that's required. God's vengeance, not so much my vengeance or someone's vengeance, but God's vengeance or a social injustice that has to be corrected. And that's the idea that in Sodom and Gomorrah, there were these things going on that demanded some type of verdict be pronounced upon these cities. And that's where we are in our story. Let's see. Make sure. The other thing to, and I'm jumping ahead of myself just a little bit, but I want to make sure I get this point out. We talk about in chapter 18, the beginning, the Lord appears to Abram. You know, we remember the three people walking up to Abram and Abram going out to meet them and everything. The events of chapter 18 and almost to the end of chapter 19, not quite all of 19, but most of it, is a 24-hour period. So this is a well-documented slice in time. 24 hours takes place between when this initial discussion takes place with the Lord and Abram to we see the end of Sodom and Gomorrah. So it's not like we're talking about days or weeks or even months. We're talking about one day that takes place. Now the two angels came to Sodom in the evening as Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. Two angels came to Sodom in the evening as Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. When Lot saw them, he rose to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. And he said, "Now behold, my lords, please turn aside into your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise early and go on your way." They said, however, "No, but we shall spend the night in the square." Yet he urged them strongly, so they turned aside to him and entered his house, and he prepared a feast for them and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. Before they laid down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, surrounded the house, both young and old, all the people from every quarter. And they called out to Lot and said to him, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out that we may have relations with them." But Lot went out to them at the doorway and shut the door behind him and said, "Please, my brothers, do not act wickedly. Now behold, I have two daughters who have not had relations with man. Please let me bring them out to you and do to them whatever you like. Only do nothing to these men, inasmuch as they have come under the shelter of my roof." And they said, "Stand aside." Furthermore, they said, "This one came in as an alien and is already acting like a judge. Now we will treat you worse than them." So they pressed hard against Lot and came near to break the door. But the men reached out their hands and brought Lot into the house with them and shut the door. They struck the men who were at the doorway of the house with blindness, both small and great, so they wearied themselves trying to find the doorway. Now, where was Lot at the beginning of the chapter? I'm sorry? He was sitting by the gate. This is usually a place that's reserved for a city official, someone that's important associated with the city. They sit by the gate of the city to watch who's coming in and to take appropriate actions. Now, what was Lot's attitude towards these angels? He bowed down to them. He respected. I'm sorry?
He prayed?
I'm not sure if he prayed yet. He may have been praying when that crowd came around him. But the idea is that Lot had a proper attitude towards these angels as they came out to him. He went out to them and bowed low. Because we haven't gone, y'all didn't read 18 like I did, I'll just share with you the response that Abraham had to the strangers that came to him. As you read that, and the response that Lot had to the strangers that came to him are quite different. The Bible tells us Abraham ran out to those strangers to meet them with a kind of showing that he was excited about them being there. You don't get that feeling from Lot as we read the details of that. He went out there. He knew he was supposed to. Abraham wanted to go out there and do what he was supposed to. The feast that Abraham fixed for the strangers, we talk about he takes his finest flour, makes cakes. He goes and gets, I believe it's a goat, and prepares that, has his servants all get everything ready for him. And here we read the term, there's a term feast that's used, but he's having a feast with unleavened bread. And as y'all know, unleavened bread's kind of flat and not that tasty or anything. So there's a difference in even his preparation for these visitors that he has. In the Old Testament, there are three kinds of visitors that you can have, or three kind of protected classes, excuse me. And I say protected classes, those are, by tradition, you were supposed to watch out for them, take care of them. And those were strangers that came to your place, or sometimes referred to as aliens, the widows, and the children. You were supposed to treat them properly. Here we get the idea from the town of Sodom that that hasn't taken place. We've had strangers or aliens come to visit the town, and they want to do unspeakable things to these men, as opposed to treat them with respect and welcome them. So you can kind of see the whole attitude of Sodom was wrong. Finally, why would Lot offer up his daughters to the crowd? Why do y'all think he would do that?
I
can give you three reasons I've read. Well, if he had my daughters, he would never, ever think of doing such a thing. No, I can't imagine as a dad ever, I'm sure Mr. Dunn would agree, and Sam, you got one daughter, and Billy, you have no daughters, but y'all can't imagine ever giving up Rocky. You can't imagine giving up your daughters for something like that, ever. Well, the other reason is that he knew the crowd. Lot knew who these guys were. And it'd be like offering a ribeye to a vegetarian. They're not going to touch it, right? Well, these men had no desire for women, so he knew that, yeah, I'd take my daughters. No, you don't want them. See, he thought they were safe. Yes, sir. Yes, that was, and it was quite brutal, wasn't it? Yes, that was an awful story. The other argument had been that Lot, because of his mindset at this point, was so concerned about the customs of protecting these men that he basically subverted the priorities. In other words, instead of providing a hospitable place and safety for his guest, he made that the priority over protecting his family. He kind of flip-flopped everything. Where his goals and priorities were now wrong. So those are the three kind of ideas. Either way, I can't imagine why he would say what he did, but he did. Yes, ma'am. He was just wrong. Yeah. He was just wrong. It was just wrong. Just flat out wrong. Now, Genesis 19 goes on to say, then the two men said to Lot, who else have you here? A son-in-law and your sons and your daughters and whoever you have in the city, bring them out of the place. For we are about to destroy this place because of their outcry has become so great before the Lord that the Lord has sent us to destroy it. Lot went in and spoke to his sons-in-law who were to marry his daughters and said, up, get out of this place, for the Lord will destroy the city. But he appeared to be jesting to his son-in-laws to be jesting. So did Lot follow the instructions of the angels? Yeah, he went and told the son-in-laws just like he was supposed to do. So again, this idea that Lot recognizes that these are special angels, special people, if you will. They were able to blind these guys so they couldn't get into the house. He recognizes God's hands upon them, and he follows their instructions. So there are some good things about Lot in terms of his obedience. I don't want to paint a negative, completely negative picture of Lot. In Genesis 19, we read, when morning dawned, and the angels urged Lot, saying, up, take your wife and your two daughters. Again, this morning dawn, remember, the guys had, it had been night, now it's morning, so we're talking the next day now. When morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, or you will be swept away in punishment of the city. But he hesitated. So the men seized his hand, and the hand of his wife, and the hands of his two daughters, for the compassion of the Lord was upon him. And they brought him out and put him outside the city. Then they brought him outside and said, and notice the escapes here, escape for your life, do not look behind you, and do not stay anywhere in the valley. Escape to the mountains, or you will be swept away. But Lot said, oh no, my lords, now behold, your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have magnified your loving kindness, which you have shown me by saving my life. But I cannot escape to the mountains, for the disaster will overtake me, and I will die. Now behold, this town is near enough to flee to, and it's small. Please let me escape there. Is it not small? Then my life may be saved. He said to him, behold, I grant this request also not to overthrow the town which you have spoken, which is Zoar. Okay? Hurry, escape there, for I can do nothing until you arrive there. Therefore, the name of the town is called Zoar, which means small or somewhat insignificant. The sun had risen over the earth when Lot came to Zoar. And again, this is about the same time that the angels had initially stopped by to see Abram the previous day. Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. He overthrew those cities and all the valley and all the inhabitants of the city and what grew on the ground. But his wife from behind him looked back, and she became a pillar of salt. Now Abram arose early in the morning and went to the place where he had stood before the Lord. And he looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah and toward all the land, and he saw, and behold, the smoke of the land ascended like smoke of a furnace. Thus it came about that the Lord destroyed the cities of the valley, that God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow. Then he overthrew the cities in which Lot lived. Lot went up from Zoar and stayed in the mountains. I won't get into that yet. In this previous, I'm going to back real quick. The one thing that I'm hoping to show you guys here is, thus it came about that God destroyed the cities of the valley and that God remembered Abram. Can y'all think of another verse in just a few chapters before this that God remembered someone? Had to do with a lot of water. God remembered Noah, right? Now God remembered Abram. God remembered Noah because of his righteousness at that time. God remembered Abram because of the promise that he had made to him about protecting the righteous, as it were, that were in that city. But it's not worded, God remembered Lot. Lot wasn't saved because of something that he had done initially. He was saved and his family was saved because of Abraham's intervention. The other thing, too, that I find a little bit... kind of neat about it, actually. When we're talking about how he escaped and everything, we get to that point that was in here. He said, they're trying to get him out of here, and he says, but Lot said to them, oh no. It's like they're trying to save his life, and he's saying, nope, I'm not ready to do that. Let me talk. So he starts going on this little discourse about where they're going to go. He can't just go to the mountains like they told him to. No. And he knows that the destruction is imminent, but his concern is about me. What's going to happen to me? I can't make it to the mountains. He doesn't say anything about his daughters, doesn't say anything about his wife. It's me. I can't make it there. The town of Zoar is spared, not because of Lot's big concern, because Zoar was on the little map there to get nailed as well. They were all in the same region. Zoar was, it wouldn't have been anything for that to get wiped out either. And yet, because of this intervention, now the town of Zoar is spared. However, the idea is it wasn't because Lot was concerned about the righteous that may be in Zoar. No, I just need a safe place to go to, and I want it to be an easy place. And he wants to live in the town. He doesn't want to live out in the wilderness anymore. So, me, me, me. Then we come to that kind of ugly part of the story, too. As if it hadn't gotten any better, it kind of goes downhill from there. Lot went up from Zoar and stayed in the mountains, and his two daughters with him, for he was afraid to stay in Zoar. He was going to get blamed for what happened in Sodom and Gomorrah, so he was afraid to stay there. So he stayed in the cave, he and his two daughters. Then the firstborn said to the younger, "Our father is old, and there is not a man on earth to come in this after the manner of earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine. Let us lie with him, that we may preserve our family through our father." So they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father. And he did not know it when she lay down or when she arose. On the following day, the firstborn said to the younger, "Behold, I lay last night with my father. Let us make him drink wine tonight also. Then you go in and lie with him, that we may preserve our family through our father." So they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger rose and lay with him, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. Thus both daughters of Lot were with child by their father. The firstborn son called his name Moab. He is the father of the Moabites to this day. As for the younger, she also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the sons of Ammon to this day. A wicked end there, isn't it? So what was Lot's response to leaving Sodom? We kind of talked about that. He hesitated. And again, what's not written about his departure is the fact that he wasn't concerned about those that he was leaving behind. He was only concerned about what was going to happen to me. Yes. Good job. So what did Lot lose from all this, from what he had? What did he lose? Pardon? He lost his wife. He lost his wealth. He lost his cattle. He pretty much lost everything. All because of that decision made several years ago that this is where I was going to live and this is how I was going to do things. The other thing to point out, too, as we talk about his wife, as you did, the idea isn't so much that she was slower than the rest and she kind of tarried behind because she couldn't keep up with them. It's the idea that her heart was still looking back towards Sodom and wanting that way of life. Yes, physically she wasn't with Sodom. The Bible tells us that Lot was ahead of his wife and she was behind them. But it wasn't just the idea that she was physically behind them, but that her heart was still bending back towards Sodom, and that's where she wanted to be, and therefore she was destroyed. Which also goes back to the other side of it, is why didn't Lot stay with her to make sure, honey, we're going, let's go. The Bible references Sodom and Gomorrah several times, but this is when our Lord's talking about it. And Luke writes for us, it was the same as happened in the days of Lot. They were eating, they were drinking, they were buying, they were selling, they were planting, they were building. Normal day, right? But on that day that Lot went out from Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed all of them. It'll be just the same on the day that the Son of Man is revealed. On that day, the one who is on the housetop and whose goods are in the house must not go down and take them out. And likewise, the one who is in the field must not turn back. Remember Lot's wife? Whoever seeks to keep his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life will preserve it. Now, Pastor will have a whole sermon on that. I'm going to defer that to him. Peter also writes us, in somewhat encouraging us, "For if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and committed them to the pits of darkness reserved for judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, a preacher of righteousness, with seven others, when he brought a flood upon the world of the ungodly. And if he condemned the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to destruction by reducing them to ashes, having made them an example to those who would live ungodly lives thereafter, and if he rescued righteous Lot, oppressed by the sensual conduct of unprincipled men, for by what he saw and heard that righteous men, while living among them, felt his righteous soul tormented day after day by their lawless deeds, then the Lord knows how to rescue the godly from temptation and to keep the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment, and especially those who indulge the flesh in its corrupt desires and despise authority. Peter kind of encouraging us that God knows what's going on and he will take care of things. The thing I wanted to note here is this idea of righteous Lot. In terms of righteous, the way they're wording it here, when we try and compare Lot to Abram, it's hard to do that because Abram we see as such a, you know, the father of the nation of Israel and all this kind of stuff and all the acts that he had done. And we consider Lot and the things that he did and didn't do. It's hard to compare the righteousness like that. But when you compare righteous Lot to the way he was living among the people of Sodom, he did have a righteous lifestyle. And I think that's where Peter is going with this idea of being righteous. Righteous in comparison to the people that lived around him. And again, to further put a plus in Lot's column, if you will, he was aware of what was going on around him, and it did bother him. It wasn't like he had a seared conscience and was just indifferent to everything now. But he did care, and it did bother him, the things that were going on. Why he didn't take action on that, I don't know. But that's something we can learn from him as well, that just because something's wrong, we don't necessarily have to say, I'm okay with it. I'm just going to close with this real quick. Benjamin Franklin wrote, "There are two passions which have a powerful influence in the affairs of men. These are ambition and avarice, the love of power and the love of money. Separately, each of these has great force in prompting man to action. But when united in view of the same object, they have in many minds the most violent effects." Again, the idea of power and money work together against Lot to produce decisions that he would live to regret. That's all I have for today, guys. Do y'all have any questions or anything like that? You've been a quiet group. I hope I didn't bore you to death. Yes, Brother Ron.
Mm-hmm. And his two daughters were unfaithful in the Lord's eyes, and they yielded to sin.
Mm-hmm.
So sin was a predominant characteristic there in the Proverbs.
What's kind of interesting on the parallel to that also, Brother Ron, is the idea of Noah, after this great victory, if you will, with the flood and everything, he succumbs to the temptation. Well, wine is involved with him as well as it was with Lot. You know, Lot survived this horrific fire and brimstone thing, and now he gets drunk. Noah gets drunk. Their children sin against them, and we see the repercussions of that in both their lives. Now then, in the Far Eastern culture, the idea of what the girls did in terms of the Moabite culture and the Ammonite culture, those were applauded for their desire to keep the family line going. So it depends on your point of view as far as how the girls are viewed. How desperate they were, I don't know. The idea, too, with regard to Lot and his age, wasn't so much that he was so old he couldn't produce a child. It was the fact that he was old and wasn't seeking husbands for them. That was their big concern. So they took matters upon themselves to get pregnant, and that's how they did it. Rather than trying to go out and get a husband for themselves, which was his job, they just impregnated themselves by their father. Kind of a twisted story. I hear children at the door. Anything else, guys? Thank y'all so much for your time. I appreciate it.